I was reading in the Buddhist dictionary this morning about, well, it actually came on the back of a card I'd bought called Buddha Nusati. And then I looked in the dictionary and it for Anusati. And it gave recollections. Now, all of these recollections, are they by anybody or are they recollections by Aryans?
What are you thinking about now?
An answer to my question.
What are you thinking about now? About the teachings, or about the virtues of Buddha, about the Sangha, or about something else?
What about the teachings?
So, that is one moment of thinking about the teachings.
So not necessarily for Aryans?
No. Why do you think that it's for Aryan?
Well, the name of the sutta I was reading was How a Noble One Dwells. And I assumed it was noble, like Sotapanna Anagami.
It's thinking different for noble one and the common one.
A little bit. Well, it's still thinking.
Thinking. It depends on the subject of thinking and the level of understanding of what one is thinking about.
The noble one does not have any more doubt, has firm confidence in the Buddha and his teaching. It's still always better to think in terms of moments.
Yes, good reminder.
I have a question about Sakaya. Now, we know Sakaya Ditti means wrong view of self. Sakaya itself, I think sa means oneself and kaya means heap or collection. Now I read that kaya means things material, so in Sakaya Ditti it is actually all the khandhas that are taken for self, not just things material. So this is one question, why it is defined in other contexts as things material. And another question is Sakaya as being defined as the round of rebirths in the three planes.
Right now we all have kaya, right? From head to toe, material, one meaning. Another meaning is namakaya, citta and cetasika, which arise together.
So when it is sakaya, it is referring to
khandhas.
All the khandhas.
Yes.
And why does it say in the commentaries that sakaya is defined as the round of rebirths? In particular, I was looking at an expression that comes up in the suttas about sakaya birato, or greatly delighted in the sakaya, and not having got rid of the sakaya. So in other words, the round of rebirths goes on.
Then there's still sakaya ditti.
So when there's still sakaya ditti, then the round of rebirths go on. So when it talks in the suttas about being delighted in the sakaya, it is referring to Sakaya Ditti, even though it's not mentioned.
Oh, just now. Yeah. Delight.
Well, there can be delight with or without wrong view.
Delight with five khandhas.
Usually just attachment.
Five khandhas. It doesn't have to be Ditti all the time.
No.
It can be with Lopa. So but as Sakaya Ditti is not yet eradicated, it can condition Ditti at any time.
So here the Sakaya Birato, the delight in the Sakaya, is delight with attachment or with wrong view, but conditioned by wrong view of self.
When it's Ditti, it has to be wrong view.
But both can be implied here.
I think that it's every moment in daily life that we can understand whether it is delight in Sakaya or with Ditti. Let's talk about the truth to be known, to understand.
Is there delight with mana?
Arising with lobha. When we ask about the term, what about the reality? At that very moment, with lobha, is delight?
Delight is pleasure.
No?
Yes, no.
Just any time to understand reality as it is.
When one has delight with lobha or with ditti, it's a kusala. And when one's understanding is to get rid of it, is not the right way.
Is just to understand citta.
Chetasikas. And that is only thinking.
Thinking is real. At moment of thinking.
So everybody who study Dhamma always thinks all the time.
What about those who do not study Dhamma? Realities are realities. It doesn't mean that while one is repeating, then that's Dhamma. But when one does not thinking about it, there's no Dhamma. It's not like that. Anytime, any moment should be understood. It's not self.
And thinking with understanding Dhamma, there are many kinds of thinking. Without understanding Dhamma and thinking with understanding Dhamma.
Are you talking about jitas in daily life?
Yes. This is very rising, that kind of thinking.
Are you still talking about jitas in daily life?
In daily life, but not at the very moment.
In the last few days, you've referred quite a lot to the latent tendency of ditti and silabhata paramasa, conditioning attachment to arise. So attachment may arise, for example, some kind of strong effort, for example, or you refer to the upakalesa, and at such moments, what I've heard you saying is that there is no wrong view, no silabhata paramasa, only attachment, but it's conditioned by the latent tendency of wrong view or silabhata paramasa. So for the sotapanna, because such latent tendency has been eradicated, so these kinds of attachment won't arise. And these moments of attachment, they're being conditioned by natural decisive support condition, by that latent tendency, is that right?
What about now? Is it what you are talking about?
I don't think so now. I would say
it's lobha.
There is lobha.
What is conditions for its arising?
Well, normally I would have just said the accumulation of lobha.
That's why we cannot tell at all at this very moment what conditions what, until there is the understanding of reality as it is, and then there can be more understanding when one is getting used to the reality of Dhamma at that very moment, not just thinking whether now it's conditioned by such latent tendencies or not.
We can just know that it's accumulated that way. And you also referred to Sharpapanya, seeing I still there as latent tendency and understanding the latent tendency. Now, if attachment, ordinary attachment arises now, for example, I just like the color here, something like this, how can latent tendency be understood if no wrong view is arising at such a moment?
What exactly latent tendencies are?
Seven.
Yeah. And what about the pagatupanisya pajaya?
Yes, well, it is
everything.
Everything is
so conditioned. Do we have to find out which one condition such and such? It's
no.
Impossible just to tell, because it's the big, very big heap of anusya. All are there.
Right.
So how can one know that this one is conditioned by such and such?
Yes. Well, I don't think one has to work that out. But when you talk about Sharpapanya, knowing the latent tendency that's still there, even though that akusala doesn't arise, so we know because of various latent tendencies, okay, attachment arises. But how at that moment can there be any knowing of, for example, latent tendency of wrong view if it doesn't appear?
When kusala arises, it falls away, and what arises?
After kusala?
So without latent tendencies, can that kusala arise?
When you refer to shavapanya, knowing the latent tendency, you mean when the dharmas appear only when the latent tendencies condition the akusala.
And panya can see that after that moment, akusala can arise.
Yes.
Because there are still latent tendency for that akusala.
And you also referred to, for example, the latent tendency of silabhata paramasa, for example,
Ditti is latent tendency for silabhata paramasa.
Latent ditti is condition for latent silabhata paramasa.
For silabhata paramasa, because there must be latent tendency of wrong view.
Otherwise, there wouldn't be any silabhata paramasa. And you also referred to this latent tendency. For example, we had the example of the Bodhisattva and his austerity practices, and you were saying maybe no wrong view, no silabhata paramasa, but the attachment arising or the strong virya arising as conditioned by the latent tendency of silabhata paramasa, perhaps. So this suggests that the ordinary attachment or the particular kind of activity that's motivated by that kind of attachment may be conditioned by some subtle wrong view.
I think that it's impossible to analyze the other's citta, especially the bodhisattva, at all. As much as one can understand, it's the reality right now. And it depends on how much accumulation one has to know what's what, or what conditions what. We cannot imagine the citta of bodhisattva in detail.
I'm also wondering, because you often refer to how self is there all the time. So even, for example, at moments of kusala, the latent tendency,
as long as it's not completely eradicated.
Yeah. So even at moments of kusala, the latent tendency of ditti is still there.
Or not.
And so I'm wondering whether also in some of our habits or ordinary kinds of attachment are so much a habit, so much a custom, because of being conditioned in the past by ditti. So, for example, someone may be vegetarian. There may not be any wrong view that this is the way to behave, but it's so much a habit or a custom conditioned by ditti in the past.
Can we answer all Jetasika's conditions? Like whether this or that is conditioned by such and such, like the vegetarian or the person who is not vegetarian, whether they like it, by what bhajya, and the different anusaya or something like that.
I was just generally interested in the aspect that has come up of attachment arising conditioned by wrong view, conditioned by silabhata paramasa, even when there's no wrong
that
view.
That is thinking and thinking and thinking, only thinking. It's not my accumulation to think about things like that. So usually I cannot answer.
With talking about conditions, at the stage of jnana where it's, is it pachaya parikha jnana, when the being knows the conditions for nama and rupa, is that like knowing all conditions or just...
If there is no understanding really right now, can you understand that it's conditioned in order to become detached from taking it for I, just that? But one can see that how much one can know about conditions for a moment of seeing. See, by studying one knows that there must be cetasikas and aramana. At this moment of seeing, what do you know? about conditions.
Only what I've read. I don't.
So
yeah.
It's different level of understanding. So one begins to understand the difference between the intellectual understanding and the direct understanding. The intellectual understanding will bring just the idea about realities, but the direct understanding brings about the understanding of reality, a reality at a time, to become detached by not clinging or thinking too much about it. Otherwise, it's only just thinking. And thinking is not the direct moment of understanding. As much as there can be the understanding of any reality right now, it's conditioned, not at will at all. For example, now, do you have intention to hear?
Yes.
Really? Really?
Well, I guess there's intention.
When there is no sound, do you have intention to hear?
No, I guess
not. See? Until it appears. So it depends on what do you understand about the conditions at moment of that reality is appearing. It's the direct understanding. And you will see that it's so very little comparing to what is about in the book. But how come the right understanding from the book is useful? Since one studies and one sees understanding the conditions by reasoning, at that very moment there can be no clinging to understand conditions.
Could we say that at the intellectual level, if what we read, what we hear, what we think is not about present moment experiences, then it's still not intellectual understanding?
It's about. It has to be about. Otherwise, it's not the intellectual understanding. Just words that one memorizes or think about. Like seven jetasikas accompany each moment. Who will know one? Even one of seven at moment of hearing or seeing. But there's desire sometimes. It's conditioned to just want to know. Or when one reads about that level of jhana, which can understand the conditions, one might think that one should know. But that is not the direct understanding. So one can see the difference between the intellectual understanding and the direct understanding. Without the intellectual understanding, it's impossible to have any understanding of reality right now. But when it arises, it depends on how much one knows that one can become detached. This is the point.
So intellectual understanding involves two things. One is about the reality. Second thing, it also understands that it is there is that it's if it's not understanding this moment, then it's useless. So it's knowing what the description.
It can be conditions. When it's about reality right now. For example, why do we have to know that there are seven jetasikas arising with seeing? Because that's what all jetasikas, which karma conditioned. When it conditioned seeing, it does not condition just citta. It also conditioned the seven jetasikas with it. Both citta and jetasikas are vipaka. How come the pasa, which arises with seeing consciousness? By karma. So one can see why there is no other jetasika at that very moment. This is to understand, just to become detached.
Could we say that when we hear about the seven chetasikas, usually we have wrong understanding about these seven chetasikas. For example, if we talk about feeling, it's always my feeling, and talk about contact, we have wrong ideas about it. So when we hear about it in the correct way, then we grow to have better understanding of what it actually does.
But not right at that very moment of seeing at all.
So it's
to see whether there's wrong view or without wrong view or whether how comes it later. But to understand about reality so that there will be more and more intellectual understanding enough to condition right awareness at moment of its arising. Just for detachment again, all the teachings will lead to detachment. Otherwise it's no use because one is so attached to everything.
So again, that implies some understanding of the danger of attachment to begin with.
So even try to study the characteristics so that to
what does one study for?
To understand the direct
to understand, yeah.
So that when they arise, so everyone can experience and understand Dhamma directly at that very moment. If one doesn't know the characteristic of Dhamma condition, when the Dhamma arises, one cannot understand.
What about this moment?
This moment. Sometimes there's understanding when
this not sometime. This time
one can understand, or if there is state, and if there is no state, one can overlook.
So the answer for this time is what?
No understanding.
Awareness or no awareness?
But if one does not know the characteristic of Dhamma condition, one cannot understand what you have said.
That's why the sake or the benefit of listening is to understand.
It seems on the other hand, when we hear about anicca, dukkha and anatta, it's something we don't experience at this stage. And it's not like there's any sati to have any understanding. But because we remember and we know that whatever has arisen has passed away, then there can be a moment of detachment from the moment, knowing that it has arisen by conditions.
But it doesn't matter to think or not think about it. It's all gone. Whether there is awareness of a reality right now, if there is no awareness, because the understanding is not enough to condition awareness of a reality. But when it's there, not by conditions, one begins to understand the anatta-ness of reality. Even satipatthana or awareness, or we don't have to call it anything at all, but at that moment it is aware already to an object only, one at a time. So one can see the difference between moment with awareness and moment without awareness.
John, we keep on denigrating thinking all the time, yet to me thinking is one condition that can lead to the contemplation that is necessary for satipatthana to arise.
Yes, thinking with understanding.
Right, thinking with understanding. That is intellectual understanding at that point.
Why do you say we denigrate thinking?
In the sense that we always say, oh, that's only thinking. Well, that's not understanding, it's only thinking. But, because we're always saying that. And so it's kind of said with a sense of denigration that thinking is not a productive activity.
I think, Betty, that if it's thinking with right understanding,
right,
it's very different, but most of the time we tend
to think
thinking is, for example, banya. We're fooling ourselves by thinking about the term, but ignoring the reality that's arising now. And that's Ajahn, you sort of said quite a lot today about how speculating, which is very much the nature of thinking, looking back at trying to understand, for example, the citta of another person, of a bodhisattva or somebody else's citta, is really not helpful. Is that what you...
Can one understand by thinking, finding out, analyzing?
No. So that it's sort of...
Yeah. Can that be the understanding of reality right now? This is more important, more useful.
When it comes to pariyatti or something, one may use something as an example actually to understand one's own cittas at this moment too. So in the end, again, it comes down to sati now. Who knows when one's thinking, whether there's any understanding or not.
Yeah, but there are different chanda or interests in studying too. Some might be interested in studying the details of such and such, and some might be interested to study in order to understand reality, just that. Because one knows that one cannot know everything in the Tipitaka at all. So as much as one can understand is that which can be conditioned for right understanding of reality right now. So people have different accumulation and different chanda.
Yes, but if someone has accumulated chanda for studying Dhamma, reading about, but if there's no understanding about what...
Reading what? See?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it comes down to the same, whether you have chanda to do something else, as long as there's the understanding that it's this moment which needs to be known.
For example, if we read about the Mahajanaka, one of the birth of Buddha, do we have to think about what condition is the observing the Upasatha day and why did he do that on the board or the ship or what? See, it depends on accumulation.
Yes, and as long as there's no understanding and there's the kilesas are still there, if you read and you get lost in such speculation and stories, then it's...
And life is very short. To understand reality right now, to accumulate the understanding little by little. And that's the way to become detached. Otherwise, one cannot see attachment. It's there unknown. It motivates the thinking towards such and such thing that one has accumulated. That's why we are different. Even in the time of Buddha, there are two different interests, like one who is interested in pariyatti, just reads a lot, but the other just interested in understanding realities in order to develop right understanding of realities.
Well, it can also be an aspect of one's personality or nature. Some people just like to ask a lot of questions, mm-hmm. and others don't care.
I think
to
that
ask a lot
in Buddha time there was a monk who had responsibility to arrange the group of monks, those who were interested in Vinaya, in Sutta and in Abhidhamma were separated.
Yeah, what happened? Sorry.
There was a monk, Thappamala Buddha, who had responsibility for distributing food and dwelling place.
Arranging accommodation.
And group of interest too. I don't know whether he's the one or the other.
So you're talking about the different
accumulations
of the different interests.
Yeah.
One of the groups, the Patipat group, then?
What do you mean by Patipat?
I don't know. I just break that line.
I think that one knows one ability or one accumulation to what degree that one can understand. And then one is conditioned to be interested only on that level. Are you interested in reading Vinaya?
Not particularly Ajahn.
So very useful to understand. Yeah.
I was just thinking before you asked that about how in the Murti you make the point to read the Vinaya and the Suttas. And I was thinking if we could do the same here, but I said no.
Just to see the very, very fine kilesa. And that's good to know.
Okay, I have a question arising out of that a little bit. We were talking the other day about what the real meaning of bhikkhu is and how the meaning of bhikkhu is really the one who follows the Buddha's teachings rather than the dress or anything else. And we were also talking about, in the context of sila visuddhi, purification of sila, and you made the comment about how the sila of a lay person and the sila of a bhikkhu, one following the Patimokkha, is different. So it seems that sometimes we refer to bhikkhu as in the real sense of the one following the Buddha's teachings, and sometimes, like in that context, when you talk about the seal of a lay person, seal of the bhikkhu as being different, as referring to the one who has ordained. Is there anything more you can say?
I think that we better understand what sila is first. Robert, are you interested in sila?
I'm listening, yeah.
Yeah. What is sila?
Isn't it a kind of to do with citta seekers and ultimate reality? A moment of abstaining from indeed?
Let's talk about this word of gamavacara. There is not only citta, but there is also rupa. So there is not just only the wholesome citta or unwholesome citta, but there is also wholesome deeds and speech too, right? And how can we know about citta without the deeds and speech? For example, right now, no speech, no deeds. What citta is there? Who knows? But since there is speech and deeds, it follows the citta. That's why there are akusala sila, kusala sila, and apayagata sila. According to citta, we don't talk about any monk or anyone at all, layman or monk, but we are talking about deeds and speech. That's why we can understand that ordinary sila is the deeds and speech, which is conditioned by citta. So there are also another way of classifying sila: Jarita sila and Varita sila. Varita sila is the abstention from ill deeds, and Jarita sila is that one should follow or do opposite of Varita. For example, paying respect is not abstaining from any ill deed, but it's the moment of Kusala citta. Or you do something for your parents with kusala citta, that is also charita sila. So it's the manners of speech and deeds conditioned by citta. That's the beginning of understanding ordinary sila. But there is higher sila too, like citta is so very fine. I mean that they're different. There are different levels of akusala cittas and kusala cittas. But just the ordinary lopa, liking visible object or sound and so forth, no wrong deeds yet, it's a level, ordinary. But when it's very strong, without the understanding of that very moment, it can condition ill deeds like stealing or killing. So there are different levels of akusa. That's why in Vinaya, different, what you call it, apati. When one violates or
different offenses.
Mm-hmm. it's nice for anyone to know, too. Very beneficial. Not just for Vinaya that only monk can observe. Anyone can see the usefulness and the danger of akusala by reading Vinaya. And there is higher sila too. Without awareness or understanding reality which appears, can there be the more refined moment of sila? Because one can follow the sila, one does not violate the sila, but what about citta at that moment when there is no understanding, no awareness? So it's more subtle and more subtle. The Puthushana and Sila of Satapanna and on.
But talking about Charita Sila, the more subtle ones does not have to... Okay, Sila is deeds and speech. So when there is Sati that knows akusala in the moment, subtle akusala, does it always have to translate into action? Charita Sila?
Do they have to call?
But it seems that in daily life, in interaction between people, we are more dealing with a more less subtle akusala and kusala mind states. Because if, for example, right now some thought arises, I don't have to. Some bad thoughts about another person arises, I don't have to go and tell that person or anything. It's just being aware of that. And that's it.
And it's different kind of sila. Indriya samvara sila. Not patimokkha sila.
So back to the question I asked about sila of a lay person, sila of a bhikkhu. And your comments before. So in the context of sila, you were saying that there are different levels, different degrees of sila, and it can be more and more refined up to development of sila with satipatthana, which leads to the purification of sila. So the sila of a sotapanna is obviously different from the sila of an ordinary puthujana. So when you refer to the sila of a lay person, sila of a bhikkhu, here by the bhikkhu you're meaning the one who has developed satipatthana, the one who is following patimokkha because he really understands the danger of akusala. So you're referring actually to...
And the one who's ordained.
And the one
according to Vinaya.
So both senses of bhikkhu you're referring to.
Are you bhikkhu?
Can be.
Yeah.
Well, when you were saying the other day about bhikkhu, bhikkhu just means the one following the teaching, so that's why I wish to clarify.
Not by the ordination, but anyone can be bhikkhu in the other sense. While the one who is ordained might not follow the Buddha's teachings at all.
Anyone who's, while reading the Vinaya or listens to Vinaya, and has some right understanding, that moment there is, he's a bhikkhu.
I don't mind whether you call him bhikkhu or not. But we have to show respect to the ordained bhikkhu.
What is the real meaning of bhikkhu? Bhikkhu in Bali means one who beg, one who ask for
help. Ask
for
help
for one, those who ordain.
How does he ask?
Oh, he takes a bowl of food and he walks around the town. He doesn't ask in words, but his attitude shows that he asks for food. Not asked in words.
And so I just say,
I think the meaning of bhikkhu that we read about in the text is the one that follows the Buddha's teachings. So in the end, it always has to come back to citta, citta seeker, and rupa. So in the ultimate sense, it refers to the development of satipatthana, the following of what the Buddha taught, not the outer appearance or anything to do with the robe.
But is this asking for food anyway in the text? This reference to a bhikkhu being one who begs for food, as Kunkera was saying. Is there anywhere in the text? Is it?
The translation, the word, the term.
Just the translation.
Yeah.
But no, it doesn't have any special meaning to...
Who lives by the other's food? He does not make the food himself.
He does not do it himself.
When you do not make the food or prepare the food yourself, are you bhikkhu?
No.
So when you ask, how does he ask for food? I think you're referring to his sila.
Can monk ask from anybody?
No.
Except whom?
Mother and father.
And?
And the supporter who offer.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So we can see kilesa, see, and how to have less and less kilesa. So if someone earns something from the others, one doesn't follow the monk's behavior.
The monk doesn't actually ask for food anyway because he...
I mean that someone has accumulation to ask from the others very easily. So one can understand why it's one of the rules about monks how to do this and that.
But I think when a monk goes pindapat, he gives an opportunity to people to offer food.
What about giving to the beggar and to the monk who doesn't follow the Vinaya?
Better give the beggar than give a monk who is not following the Vinaya. Mm.
If
you know about the person's being...
What if you know the speaker?
That's it, lay people are protected.
But a baker is a baker, not in the uniform.
It's not deceiving anyone.
But you can still give to the bad monk.
Not just for his virtues.
Not his personal virtues, but because he's a monk, as a representative of the Sangha.
What did Buddha say about that monk who didn't follow the Vinaya? Who's that monk?
He's not a son of the Sakya, is he?
Not a monk.
Not a monk. And?
The point is, Robert, it's at that moment when it comes to your mind that this monk does not behave. At that moment is different from the moment you think of him as part of the Sangha.
I don't think the point is whether it's a bad monk or a good beggar or anything like that. The point is there giving going on? And has dana arisen, the jetasika for dana arisen in that person? And he understands, with understanding.
What did the Buddha say? Not a monk, and what else?
Robin. But generally, in the process of giving to monks or beggars, you don't know anything.
Bad monk.
But you don't know.
If you know
him. The one who you know.
Even if you know he's a bad monk, and you still offer food to him, the point is you're doing with, if you're doing with sthana.
No, but between him and a beggar.
Even the beggar, you're not going to know. You're not going to know what his... You see this beggar on the street. You drive your car, the little kid comes along with the flowers.
But you know, you don't have that... He's not a monk. You know that he's not a monk. So there's no idea of him being a bad monk. He's a beggar, he can be a bad beggar.
Whatever, it's an act of dana. That's all that matters.
I think it's a little different, though, because when one gives to beggars, it is just a matter of the cittas and dhanas, but when one gives to bhikkhus, it's not just a matter of dana. One has, I think, some responsibility according to the Vinaya. For example, in India, Kunsuchin was saying about people in the group, or if they were giving money to bhikkhus,
asked, then it's like sending them to hell. Well, I think the same thing if, for example, a monk is making some requests or something which is not appropriate according to the Vinaya, if one gives or something, I think one just has to consider carefully what is best for the bhikkhu in accordance with the Vinaya. It's not just a matter of just giving regardless.
Well, I remember about 5 years ago, there was a monk that I had met at somebody's house, okay? I was impressed with him at first, and thinking, oh, this is a very, you know, because she had done a tamu ceremony at the house, and I thought this monk was very nice at first, and I gave him my card, mistake. I thought, at that time, I felt it was a mistake. And the monk called me, and he said, may I come visit you? And I said, sure, okay. And then he basically began to ask for money for his temple up in the north. And the first time I said to myself, okay, I'll give one donation to him, fine. And it's a nice idea to help, okay, at that time. And then he kept calling. And every time he came down to Bangkok, he would call and ask for donation. There was the feeling that doing dana for this particular monk would merely act as condition for him to ask more people for donations and stuff like that.
Actually,
yeah. So is that the kind of monk you're referring to?
I see what you mean.
Generally, you know, we go to Tambun, we in the process of meeting monks, we don't know them, we don't know what they're like and everything else, and we just, you know, so there's just giving. Okay, because we're not discerning about the person's behavior, the monk's behavior at that time. There's no knowledge of the monk or whatever. We give because it's an opportunity to give.
Again, if a monk asks you for something relatively small, like a book or something like this, and one knows it's inappropriate or not according to the Vinaya, how will you respond?
What kind of book?
Well, let's say for argument's sake it was a Dharma book, or he asks
it. It's good for him to read.
Read, right. Mm-hmm. And what about if it was, I don't know, just some other thing, but, I mean, a bhikkhu is not meant to ask for anything. If you think it's useful, you will respond? Or
what is useful? To be asked?
Just anything to do with the Dharma.
Food? No.
Food? No. Okay. So only Dharma.
What Betty just said also reminded me about the need to know also tambun and dana. In the end, it's all in the citta. I mean, when we think in terms of tambun means giving only to monks and all that, that makes things a little more difficult. And we are so concerned about giving monks and we're not even understanding what dana is and what kusla and akusla.
But there is a sutta where the Buddha says the wise lay disciple, the good lay disciple, when he gives, he looks first to give to the sasana. He doesn't look elsewhere. And that doesn't mean don't give to beggars. As I understand it, it means he has faith in the Buddha's sasana, so he sees the Sangha as a representative. And to help support the Triple Gem, he will tend to give priority to something to do with the Triple Gem, because of his confidence in the Triple Gem, rather than, say, giving it to a Christian organization or World Health or whatever.
And to do dana, like you said, to do dana, to give dana to the beggar and to the bad monk, is not the same. It's different.
Can you change to the poor?
Yes, for the baker. For the baker, we have no idea that he followed the Vinaya. But for the monk, we have the idea that he followed the Vinaya. If he is bad, the bad monk, so we don't keep. And we have to consider what is suitable for the monk to have.
Something I was reading this morning, it's called the Six Routes of Escape, and it is a monk
and saying he developed and cultivated the liberation of the mind by loving kindness, made it his vehicle, foundation, firmly established it, consolidated it, and properly undertaken it, yet ill will still persists in obsessing my mind. He should be told, not so, the Venerable One should not speak thus. He should not misrepresent the Blessed One, for it is not good to misrepresent the Blessed One. The Blessed One would not speak in such a way. And it is impossible and inconceivable that one might develop and cultivate the liberation of the mind by loving kindness, and yet ill will would still persist in obsessing one's mind. The question here is, why is he being told not so? Why is he being told that he's misrepresenting the Blessed One when he's just saying he's developed and cultivate liberation?
Because he has jhana, metta, jhana, and skilled in, he's saying he is skilled in metta, even to the level of jhana. And then he claims, but he still is overpowered.
Still has ill will. Then he is, ill will and lopa, and he goes through a whole lot. Okay, so he doesn't know.
Different moments.
But he sounds like he thinks he is
accomplished,
and yet he's saying, like, why? Well, I've still got ill will.
And he doesn't even say anything.
That's true.
When you say different moments, you mean he had developed metta,
or no?
Who knows? Yeah, again,
according to this, he says he
just
has.
His report. Who knows?
So why would he be wrong then? I mean, if it's possible that he developed metta to the level of jhana, and then it's possible also that he would have moments of dosa following that. If that's okay, then why would the Buddha say that he's not following?
Well, the Buddha didn't tell him. He's not saying that. The other monks are saying to him.
And so who's right, who's wrong?
He is wrong because he's claiming...
Well, he's claiming to have cultivated the liberation of the mind by loving kindness.
Well, liberation of the mind means, is that...
with metta, temporary.
This is called the six roots of escape, so he's suggesting this is a route of escape from samsara, I presume.
Yeah.
Or dosa. So maybe I was mistaken, actually.
Would you like to read from the very beginning? What book is that?
And it's the Book of the Sixes. There are, O monks, these six routes of escape. What six? Here, monks, a monk might say, I have developed and cultivated the liberation of the mind by loving kindness.
Okay.
How's that?
Temporarily.
That's why I'm the mistaken one. Cultivated the liberation of the mind by loving kindness, made it my vehicle and foundation, firmly established it, consolidated it, and properly undertaken it. Yet ill will still persists in obsessing my mind.
Possible?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It's not possible, is it?
As long as the dosa is not eradicated yet.
But the sutta specifies that it's impossible that someone...
Better continue. Okay.
Yet ill will still persists in obsessing my mind. He should be told, not so. The Venerable One should not speak thus. This was the bit that
confused me. Because it's not completely eradicated. There are still conditions for dosa to arise.
And so he's just speaking the truth that there are conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And why is he being told that he should not speak like that?
Because he still have the dosa. Very ordinary. Anyone can say like that. It's not strange to have some moments of metta and the other moment of dosa.
But he's being told that him admitting to that is wrong.
Not thinking that it's completely eradicated.
That's where he's wrong.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm. In the sense that he's temporary for the permanent, but the thing that he's loved through loving kindness.
He thinks it's an escape.
he should not misrepresent the Blessed One, for it is not good to misrepresent the Blessed One. The Blessed One would certainly not speak in such a way. It is impossible and inconceivable that one might develop and cultivate the liberation of the mind by loving kindness, properly undertake it, and yet ill will could still persist in obsessing one's mind. There is no such possibility. For this, friend, is the escape from ill will, namely the liberation of the mind by loving kindness. So that's...
Some might think that one can be liberated from ill will just by having metta. Mm.
That's why it's not the Buddha's path.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
the development of suppression of kilesa, temporary suppression of kilesa.
Probably. I mean, he goes through other
compassion,
altruistic joy.
With anatta, for example, doesn't it? The bhikkhu might say, I've cultivated the perception of anatta.
Yeah, yeah.
The last one. But I still have doubts. I still. And they also say it's impossible that someone who has cultivated, made anatta a root, firmly based in anatta, could still have doubts about attention and so on.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Because what the monk is doing, maybe he's considered anatta a little bit, but he thinks he's really gone to the full thing, and yet he still has doubts. So obviously, it's an overestimation in both cases, I think.
Or maybe he did have jhana,
yeah.
But he thought that led to eradication. That was the path to eradication of dosa.
Whenever the texts refer to chetu vimutti or chetu vimutti sunya, this is always referring to insight through the attainment of jhana, is it? For example, here, of all the kinds of deliverance of mind through nothingness, the unshakable deliverance of mind is pronounced the best, chetu vimutti sunya. Does this mean insight which had jhana as a basis?
It depends on the context.
Well, then it goes on to say the unshakable deliverance of mind is void of lust, void of hate, void of delusion, so it could just be referring to arahatship. Chetu vimutti doesn't necessarily refer to any prior attainment of jhana.
Yeah, and it depends on context too, what degree of vimutti. We can use the term tathanka vimutti, even temporarily.
So when it says of all the kinds of deliverance of mind through nothingness, the unshakable deliverance of mind is pronounced the best. Now that unshakable deliverance of mind is void of lust, void of hate, void of delusion, is just referring to arahatship.
Or any stage?
According
to what is meant by vimutti.
Earlier we were discussing the value of understanding the Vinaya. And the other day we were talking about asking other people for something, and you pointed out that it's often agusala motivating that request to borrow or use something that belongs to another person. Do you think that level of agusala is one that we should or can know about?
Just understand what's there. As long as there are still lopa, dosa and moha. If it does not arise, how can we know reality at that time? What level is this? At moment of asking, kusala or akusala?
Probably akusala.
Usually.
Yeah. But if we don't ask, it's probably akusala also.
Yeah. Eating is not asking, it's akusala.
Right. Yeah.
Sorry, what is akusala?
Eating.
Is it kusala?
Usually
just open. But the at moment of awareness is not.
So what about not wanting to trouble other people generally, like being grengjai and so forth?
It that depends on jitta at that moment.
Depends on
jitta.
Yeah. You can't generalize, can
no,
you?
No,
but grengjai does have conventionally a kusa. It is kusala conventionally, yeah, in a sense, isn't it? Grengjai.
If you think of the others, not want to
trouble them or disturb them.
If it's self-image that you're concerned about, that's a different
thing.
Getting back to that question about giving stuff to the bad, you know, not giving stuff to a bad monk. Suppose, with in the case of the story of the monk that I knew, the one that was asking for donations, that was conditioned. In other words, there was condition for dosa to arise at the time. It would have been far better for me to have for there to be dana arising than dosa arising.
For yourself.
Well, whatever, but still, it would have been far better had there been dana arising rather than dosa, right?
Oh, it's concerning oneself.
Well, it's always self. Yeah, 99.9999% of the time, it's self.
But for the monk?
Yeah, for us, I mean...
I know, but is that what you were saying, Adya?
I think she's pointing to what we have to consider. It's not like just giving to poor people, but when it comes to the monk, one has to consider... It's not just a question of the citta. One has to consider what is appropriate and what would be most helpful for the monk to follow the Vinaya. Because if one is in any way encouraging the breaking of the Vinaya rules, then the implications are very serious. So one doesn't want to have any part of that.
But if I have a thought, say monk is sitting there, and I say, okay, that particular monk, I know he likes to advertise, he likes to make money. So I start, all those thoughts start arising in my head. I say, oh, I'm not going to give to that monk. It's only creating dosa.
It can be compassion or equanimity at that moment of just keeping
more
quiet.
More
likely
dosa about that monk, you know. I say, oh, he's not a good monk. I'm not going to give to him. And that's basically a dosa arising about that monk. Mm-hmm.
But the point is, I think, that one can not give or one can keep quiet out of metta and compassion because one knows that is most appropriate and it's not helpful, for example, to talk about non-dana issues or give...
I'm sitting there thinking, I'm not going to give to that particular monk because he is not a good monk. Now that's dosa for me.
What about the development of metta? It's so very useful
that's
at any time.
If conditions for dana arise at that moment...
Metta doesn't mean that one has to give.
Right. Okay. Right. That would be good. That would be far better than the dosa arising at the time of seeing monk.
When there is no understanding about the developing of metta, no conditions for metta to arise.
That's true too.
But when one knows, metta is kusala, and metta is to be friendly to anyone.
Right.
Okay. More and more in a day.
So that,
that can
be
conditioned
for
metta
to arise rather than dosa.
And metta does not have to always translate into dana.
Yeah, absolutely.
And for metta, it doesn't matter how the other behaves at all.
Right.
So how he behaves, whether he's a good or bad monk, doesn't matter because no matter how one responds or reacts, it can be metta.
Instant say no with understanding.
I'm trying to know the thing which is not here and now. Is anyone used to the characteristic of a reality right now?
Assuming in the ocean of concepts, that's what.
But it is now. It's appearing.
Right, but still, it's just concepts. People think
the reality is not concept.
Right.
The characteristic of a reality is not concept. Not just any word which can bring the understanding, but its characteristic can be understood. Or,
but we're not used to it. We just
and how
hear
can
about
it become
it?
Used?
Understand.
Little by little. Yeah. Don't forget. Not forget. Are you forgetting?
What about Paramita Dharma? Did we ever decide which is better word, visible object or colour? Object is seen or visible object is fine, but the problem I have, slightly have, is it doesn't say anything about it. Whereas I feel a pari doesn't try to hide from rupa yatana or vana yatana as being definitely kala, like the sad ayatana being sound. But whereas if we say object of hearing or object of, it's like we're trying to hide away from the pali.
I think that it depends to what one used to listen to, like the word rupa ramana or visible object. But the understanding of that, no matter it's called rupayana or ruparamana, just that which is seen, no matter who will use what word.
I agree. I see why visible object or object of seen is used, because it deflects from any argument.
Because now it's visible. So we are talking about that which is visible now. Mm. But if we turn off the light, it's not visible but can be the object of seeing. Because they see.
Sorry, Rob, why do you say the Pali suggests colour?
Well, in the way that sad, what do you, when you read, say, sad ayatana, do you read sound? Would you translate as sound? Or do you translate it as object of hearing?
I think that in Attasalini it's not just one word. Many words,
yeah,
like one
yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Which represents that which is seen.
But they also suggest colour, don't they?
One.
Yeah.
Red, blue, all right, because it can be seen too.
Mm-hmm. It's an aspect of what is seen.
Anything, even darkness.
Yeah. Sarah, you just said colour is an aspect of visible object. Well, but isn't visible object actually colour?
I would say visible object is just that which is seen, and what is seen is colour is seen, lightness is seen.
That's what Robert was saying. It's always a colour that's seen.
But we can't just say seeing sees colour.
Do you see black?
Not the concept black, but black exists as...
Do you see white?
Black, white, red, green, yellow.
Dark?
Dark is different.
Not so dark.
Why?
This is
dark,
very dark.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Visible. So it's
colour,
right?
It depends on whether you call it colour or anything.
Yeah, but
we
come to think about dark and light, then it's better visible object. Because there's dark, red, right, red, with absence of light, more light. In the end, it's still just visible object. Right. And the colour does not become so apparent.
Or in darkness. They see. What is seen, no matter what you call it, in Thai or in Pali, is seen. The true nature of it is it seen.
Just that which is seen, no matter what the colour or tone or shape or... It's just that which is seen.
So, but you are saying, right, if I've got this right, you are saying, Sarah, that visible object is not colour. Colour is just a part of visible object. Whereas I always thought visible object is actually colour. Can I?
When you use the term part, what do you mean?
Well, that's what I thought Sarah just said. Sarah said it's an aspect of, colour is an aspect of visible object, right? Okay. Where I always thought they're exactly the same, but...
But if you factor light in, then the colour does not become so...
Or whenever there is seeing, there must be that which is seen. So it depends on seeing, whether seeing arises or not. When it arises, it sees. No matter we call that which is seen, color, dark, or light.
Mm-hmm.
Because seeing has to see something.
Yes, but to me it doesn't cause a problem when I think about color. If the lights go off and everything is black,
right? Seeing?
Yes.
So there must be that
and
which
is
seen.
And there is still color there in the sense that there is lack of colour, if you like, or there's blackness or whatever. It's still, colour doesn't damage my perception by calling it colour.
The problem is that when we refer to what is seen as colour, I think it's an idea of something already, whereas when I hear or when I understand visible object, it's just that which is seen, no need, no story about it.
So there's no blackness. is just visible object. Blackness is a concept,
and
to name it blackness is a concept.
To name a visible object is concept.
Visible object is
to name it, but the reality which is seen.
In the text, why do they sometimes use rupa and sometimes use vana for
any word that you can understand, like color or not color, or visible object?
Actually, they don't often use color.
Usually, it's rupa.
It's usually rupa.
But sometimes it does have
vana.
When it's that and they're seeing, that which is seen is that. You may call it color or not color or darkness. Why? Do you have to find out that color? Or since wherever that is the primary rupas, there must be color.
Yes, that's what Robert is saying.
But the color can be seen like red or blue, depending on light.
Yes, yes.
But without light, you cannot stop it to that which is with the for primary rupas to be seen.
Mm. Yeah.
So it depends on what you mean by the object of seeing.
Mm.
We always say that it's only a moment of seeing that the world is light. So in this sense, would we say light is an aspect of visible object? Because then it talks about light as a
concept again.
What's the point? Wouldn't it be Sri Magra or somewhere? Buddha goes to say light is one of the conditions for seeing.
Different colours.
Yeah, different colours,
right.
Yes.
Also, space in the ear is one of the conditions for hearing, right? Space, you need, if your ears are blocked, there's no sound. And wetness on the tongue is one of the conditions for taste, because of a completely dry tongue, in a rare case, I guess, you couldn't taste.
Right.
But that sort of conceptual idea that they bring in, but it also makes sense as well, doesn't it? Yeah.
If you don't stick to the term or the word, but you understand the reality.
It's just that which is seen, that's all.
I mean, we're not asked then to go and try to understand what light is in terms of experience, or what wetness is in terms of experience.
No.
We're just informed about that.
What I argue with Ivan was mainly, we should use both terms at times, visible object or colour, just to, you know, sometimes colour, sometimes visible object. Just otherwise, if always visible object, it sounds like we're trying to push away the problem or something, or, you know, being...
What's the difference between visible object and sound?
He's drawing a parallel between the object of hearing being sound and the object of seeing being, in
colour.
Your case, colour.
Right.
Well,
sound is still sound of guitar.
Well,
and
no, sound is just about tones and volume and so on.
If you understand, it's all right to use any word.
Perhaps there's not a good word for the visible object.
Mm.
Colour might be like tone is to sound, for example.
Yeah.
We do have a word sound that approximates the audible object, but we don't have any word that approximates the visible object.
This is what I debate, though. I say colour is very close to what is...
In darkness, do you see colour?
Well, if you define black as a colour, then that's fine.
If we don't call it black at all...
There's no colour.
But there's one thing. We still don't know for sure whether visible object is the whole panorama or whatever. When you think about color, we are actually pinpointing to particular color, one particular color. And since it's so many, so it's better to just say it's visible object.
So many are just one characteristic that can be seen?
That can be seen, yes. But when we think in terms of concepts, we're not sure if it's one color that hits or...
Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah. But colour is countable or uncountable in English. It can be colour, can mean many, or it can mean one as well, right?
But by the time we get to naming a colour, we're really thinking in concepts. We're really identifying
the
brown
book,
the yellow sky.
I'm sure this has been talked about before 20 years or 30 years ago or something, which is why eventually they decided visible object, right?
No, Chansu uses colour sometimes.
Oh, really?
Okay.
Any word you understand. What about what we change from asking for pardon
apologize?
Or something?
Jonathan thought that even apologize was not so appropriate because it still has to be to another person. Apathy,
that's just a kind of offense,
okay.
A level of offense.
Or like you mentioned in the sutta, it's like admit one's faults and resolve not to follow again. Because if you ask for forgiveness or apologize, he thought that that also implies another person. So maybe just admit one's faults out of respect for the triple gem. Admit one's wrongdoing out of respect for the triple gems.
The sutta about pukkasati, I think. Is that right?
Yeah.
The bodhisattva.
Yeah.
And then the bhikkhu apologized to the Buddha for addressing him inappropriately. And the Buddha said that inasmuch as he admitted his wrongdoing and recognized it and resolved not to do it again, that was progress.
So what shall we say about that?
Well, we need to look at the whole passage to see what comes before it.
All it says is this prayer, which we've done on several sites, but it has nothing necessarily to do with the sites, it's just that we did it at several sites. It says, may the merit that I have gained in this life from paying respect to the triple gem keep me from wrong view. May any negative gamma that I have committed against Lord Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha through action, word, or thought be forgiven. From now on, let me be more heedful of the triple gem.
But be forgiven is what we were talking about. It's not appropriate because forgiveness is somebody gives to you. And
this is a translation of what they say here in Thai, in the Thai group. But that's a good point. Should it be stricken?
Pukkasati asked for forgiveness.
But then he was talking to the Buddha, wasn't he?
And then the Buddha says it's okay, just admit it and never do it again. It's fine.
Because the person who says this admits to his own wrongdoing, but to ask for forgiveness is not appropriate.
Well, the point is in this prayer, who's doing the forgiving?
Yeah, that's it.
It's like a Sutta.
I think so.
To the Buddha.
Yeah.
But since Buddha's not here.
He made a general statement.
Yeah.
He said that insofar as a person admits their wrongdoing and resolves not to do it again, that is progress in the sasana.
Yeah.
So that is what one can do. One can admit one's wrongdoing and resolve not to do it again.
It all sounds a bit unnatural in English.
Not to do it again.
You can't acknowledge an offence that you don't know you've committed, actually.
Yes.
It's only when you do realise or acknowledge. Yeah. If you can call to mind something specific, then you can acknowledge
that.
Otherwise, it's just kind of wishful thinking.
How can the triple gem per
really
se forgive you? It's,
it's
just showing respect.
It's showing respect.
Very humbly.
Give me a sentence to write.
Well, I don't know if this is the sense of what you want
it
to say, but something like, may we acknowledge our wrongdoing out of respect for the triple gem. Maybe admit our wrongdoing out of respect to the triple gem. And resolve not to.
Resolve
not to.
Not to be a repeat offender.
Get this lawyer out.
Yeah, Jonathan drafted to cover all the possibilities.
You mentioned with all the little offshoots to cover the subclauses.
All right, we'll go out and have coffee and then we'll work on this. So in the meantime, because after 4 o'clock, we can do the one that doesn't have any problem with it.